Welcome to Module 8 in the Evidence-Based Leadership Program, The Habit of Learning. Too often, the strategic or change initiatives to close our performance gaps are set in stone and are often set before we truly know what the causes of those performance gaps are. We focus on setting the budget and the strategic projects before there's enough time to discover what the best solutions are, the ones that have leverage and a good return on investment. In high-performance organizations, strategic initiatives are fluid and they're responsive to what everyone learns will have the best chance to close performance gaps. So strategy, in a way, is a series of business experiments. Learning is the process of hypothesizing, experimenting, learning from results, whether they're successes or failures, and allowing multiple iterations to find the best ways to close performance gaps. Earlier in this EBL series, you might recall I told the story of a safety manager who howled at me for showing him a performance measure in a time series graph. That measure had shown no change in over 2 years. It was the number of derailments, and it consistently averaged around 6 per month and could vary up to as many as 13 in a month. The safety manager erupted angrily and accused the graph of being wrong and of me having no idea what I was doing, despite the fact that I was a qualified research statistician. His reaction was because he felt like the graph was telling him he had failed. The truth was, he probably did try some reasonable improvement strategies to reduce the average number of derailments, but they weren't having the desired effect since the measure showed no change was happening. If we deliberately try something to close a performance gap but it doesn't work, is that really a failure? And if we continue to focus on failure, what will that do to everyone's energy and enthusiasm to learn and creatively solve problems? I reckon if we keep failure in our vernacular, we will not reach high performance. Failure is something we fear, and what we fear, we avoid. To avoid failure, we often don't bother trying, or we do what we know already works. The consequence of both is no learning, and without learning, we won't keep up with the world around us, and so the only way to go is backwards. We need to decouple our self-esteem from the results of our deliberate attempts to improve performance. Adam Savage is probably best known as co-host with Jamie Heineman of the Discovery Channel television series Mythbusters. He has the right mindset for learning, to focus on success of experiments being defined as getting a result. Not necessarily the result we might have wanted, but a result that grows our knowledge. Adam also says this: it's sort of a mental attitude about critical thinking and curiosity. It's about the mindset of looking at the world in a playful and curious and creative way. And one of his famous jokes is this: I reject your reality and substitute my own. Now that's important because it's a great way to lightly draw attention to an insidious bad habit we often allow to go unchecked when we use measures. When we don't like the data, we reject it and go back to our more comfortable opinions. Learning requires play. Learning requires experimentation. Learning requires exploration. It requires challenge. It requires daring. But above all, learning requires failure. And we have to be okay with that, or we won't learn. Experimentation is the way that we can be deliberate with failure to use it for learning. Here is a measure we've looked at back in the EBL habit of action. It's the purchasing OPEX as a percent of purchasing spend. Now, there were several change initiatives chosen to make this improvement in purchasing OPEX that you see in the XMR chart. Let's look at measures of those change initiatives to see which initiatives might have worked and which failed. One change initiative was to remove suppliers that were underperforming, specifically that were not good at delivering in full and on time into the energy company's inventory. The change initiative was measured by DIFOT to inventory. DIFOT is just an acronym for delivery in full and on time. Now, looking at the correlation between this measure and the result measure, which is improving purchasing OPEX, do you think the change initiative of removing underperforming suppliers worked to reduce purchasing OPEX? Well, removing suppliers that were underperforming certainly did improve the delivery in full and on time into the company's inventory. But the change shows no correlated change in the purchasing OPEX measure. So likely this hasn't had the intended effect. Another initiative to reduce purchasing OPEX was to reduce spending on purchase cards or P cards, which is basically spending without a formal procedure. It's also referred to in this energy company as maverick spending. Looking at the correlation between the two measures, do you think the change initiative of reducing spending on P cards worked? Well, it does seem to have had maybe a delayed effect, if any, but likely it's not the only factor that impacts purchasing OPEX. Another initiative was to get internal customers to do more purchasing on approved contracts with approved suppliers. Now, do you think the change initiative of increasing spending on approved contracts worked? Well, yeah, it does seem to have had some effect, but the correlation isn't quite the same, so again, it's not the only factor that impacts on purchasing OPEX. But we've seen three initiatives that do seem to have worked together to cause that reduction in purchasing OPEX. They were all implemented at the same time, unfortunately, so we can't really isolate the effect of each one individually. If you want to isolate the effect of a single strategic initiative, you need to implement it in a controlled way so that other changes don't confound or mix with that initiative's individual impact. Well, another useful thing to do too, to boost our learning from failure, is to check the unintended consequences of reaching for a performance target. In reaching for the target to reduce purchasing OPEX, a potential unintended consequence is that all the fat is trimmed, but some muscle goes along with it too. Reducing purchasing OPEX too drastically might mean that internal customers can no longer get the goods and services they need because of too few suppliers and too rigid a procurement process. A measure of how often internal customers do get the goods and services they need from the energy company's internal inventory is DIFOT, issues from inventory. So were there unintended consequences? Did reaching the target for purchasing OPEX cause an unintended consequence here? Well, the performance of DIFOT, issues from inventory, which again means the delivery in full and on time of products issued from the energy company's own inventory, well, it didn't decline, but its own performance gap hasn't closed. Now, maybe no initiative was focused on improving DIFOT issues from inventory, or maybe the reduction in purchasing OPEX counteracted any initiative to improve it. It's really hard to learn exactly the impact of each individual change initiative. We can use data, like we just have, to get a good idea. But if we really want to isolate the impact of a single change initiative to learn the most that we can from it, we need to learn from the scientists. The scientific method can, and does, work in business too. Gary Loveman was CEO of Caesars Entertainment for 12 years. And while he was there, Loveman was famous for saying that stealing is a sackable offence, but so too is running a business experiment without a control group. What Loveman probably means is that implementing an initiative to make a change to the business without knowing if it's worked or not is pretty much the same as stealing. Stealing the resources that were spent on the initiative without any return to the business. Remember that high-performance organizations aim for high ROI improvement initiatives. A business experiment is simply testing an hypothesis about how to improve a specific aspect of performance or how to close a specific performance gap. Don't think about lab coats and beakers and petri dishes and probes. Business experiments can be very simple, but they do need to be deliberate. We start with choosing the performance gap to close. For example, reduce the percentage of weekend adjacent sick leave from 68% down to 40%. Then we design the initiative to test as an hypothesis. The hypothesis should be tested in a controlled way so we can compare its impact with doing nothing. Two main ways to control an experiment are by place, in other words, implementing the initiative in one location but not in others, or by time, implementing just one initiative with nothing else changing at the same time and then comparing before and after. An hypothesis here might be employees take less sick leave when they have authority to make their own decisions. Then we implement the initiative and check the measure to test the hypothesis. So, for example, some teams might be chosen to try out the experiment where managers allow those employees to make more of their own decisions. Then the weekend adjacent sick leave measure is compared before and after, but also with the other teams where the experiment was not run. Now, if the experiment holds true, then the initiative worked well enough and we can probably roll it out. For example, if the weekend adjacent sick leave measure showed that employees actually do take less sick leave when they have authority to make their own decisions, then company policy can be updated and allow that for every team. Finally, if the initiative did not work well enough, we form another hypothesis and test again. Now, this is how strategy execution on the ground should work, as business experiments that test hypotheses about the impact of improvement initiatives on closing performance gaps. So now, how does the idea of using business experiments compare with the traditional way that strategic initiatives are chosen and executed in your organization? For example, how routinely do you consider using evidence of what works and what doesn't? How routinely do you consider the amount of focus that is put on implementation versus on having an impact? How routinely do you consider allowing enough time to test a business experiment before rolling out an initiative organization-wide? And how routinely do you consider willingly ditching a strategic initiative that shows evidence of not working? So learning by reframing failure is the hardest of all the EBL principles or habits to take on, but it's not a new concept. The incredible Chinese classical dance form, Shun Yan, it wouldn't even exist if the dancers did not have the courage to fall hundreds of times and every time get back up to try again. Even Dan Ariely, author of Predictably Irrational, has found this to be the case time and again. We don't like short-term loss for long-term gain. But not liking it is no excuse not to try. To truly become a high-performance organization, learning is not negotiable. Well, if you feel curious right now about how many of your strategic initiatives might be true business experiments versus just assumptions, Here's a thought activity for you to try. Now, a change initiative means an improvement project, a strategic initiative, a key action. You might call it something else. But start by focusing on the newly designed measure you did when you went through EBL Habit 2, evidence. Then go back and look up the change initiative that you designed earlier as well to close your guesstimated performance gap in that measure. What ideas do you have now for how you can isolate the implementation of that change initiative so that you can properly test its real impact? And now it's time for us to wrap up with three mindsets, which are a good place to get started to practice the EBL habit of learning. Think experiments, not assumptions. Start small with your changes, with your strategic initiatives, and bring experimenting into at least some continuous improvement initiatives. There is no failure, only feedback. Make it okay to fail. Reframe what fail means, just so long as we learn from it and not fail in the same way again. And iterate, don't procrastinate. Design small experiments that can be implemented quickly and easily, and then progressively build upon them with better and bigger hypotheses to test. So, we've explored the six EBL habits to lead a high-performance organization. Our final part of exploring EBL is to consider its implementation. So up next, you'll see how to create a roadmap for your organization to put into practice all the EBL habits. You'll see how it doesn't have to be a massive or sudden change because of what the Nautilus shell teaches us. Coming up next is Module 9 of the Evidence-Based Leadership Program. Implementation is iterative. It's about using the EBL framework in 5 stages and iterating through those stages over time to create and grow a high-performance culture in a self-sustaining way.